Panic and Treat the Podcast is a personal podcast produced for informational and entertainment purposes only. The content reflects the host's opinions and personal experiences as new graduate nurses. It does not constitute professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.
All patient details have been changed or left out to protect privacy in accordance to HIPAA guidelines. Any resemblance to real people is purely coincidental. The point of views in this podcast are ours alone and do not reflect those of our employers, schools, or any organizations we are connected to. For health concerns or concerns of a general nature, please talk to a qualified professional. And with that, let's get started.
Hey, besties.
Hello.
It's Jess.
And it's Alora.
And this is the Panic and Treat Podcast.
Welcome back, listeners. We are so excited to see you. Right, foremost and off the bat, I think we have to address the situation that we've got going on right
the
now.
The upgrades are happening, friends.
We have upgraded the studio just a little bit, just a little ASMR for you.
But my husband complained about our mics.
We were looking back at our first few videos because we were just using, we weren't sure how popular this was going to get, but we feel like we are getting out and feeling out more people, and more people are saying, oh my God, we love it. So we were looking back at our videos and we were like, oh, We need better mics.
We need better mics. So Alora upgraded in the middle of the night the other night.
She was just texting me. She was like, we should think about it. And I said, they're in the cart, actually. When are you ready?
Do you want to share everybody your gift that we did in our unboxing?
Yes, I do, everybody. Okay, so Jess, my lovely little co-host, she got me two different Halloween glass cups.
Mine are clear over there, so I'm
yes,
not kidding.
I was going to say, I tossed them off to the side here, but they are, what TikTok shop did you say they were from?
Sip Sip Hooray.
On TikTok, go find her. I love these. They're glass. They're beautiful. Go look at the unboxing video. There's more. Anyways.
Oh, and then we got these fun little mug rugs.
Yes.
They're little ghosties, and they're going to live in here probably forever because I love spooky stuff.
Our spooky episode is going to be off the walls. Y'all aren't even ready. We've already got people emailing us some of their most crazy spooky stories on the floor. So get in on this if you want to hear your story on the internet.
And we'll put the email in at the end. What are you drinking today?
So today I have an Awala. I love you guys so much. And it has ice water because you know what? We are hydrated.
You drink your water.
We are queens of hydration around here because we just talked about this in the last episode. Gotta stay hydrated. And then I've also got a cherry Sprite.
Cherry berry Sprite.
Whatever it is from Chick-fil-A.
Yeah, the new one. And I got my Chick-fil-A too.
Oh gosh, they're so good.
What did I get? Oh, I got regular Sprite.
I was like, I'm being a
basic girly today. And then our scent this week, Alora brought over a hot cocoa and cream candle from Bath & Body Works.
We're getting into fall. We've given up on summer. We are moving on. And
yeah,
that's okay.
It's officially September.
It's the burr months. Now, it's still like 80 degrees outside, but that doesn't mean anything to me.
Listen, all of you non-healthcare workers, make your healthcare worker a blue basket. We deserve it.
Oh, yes. I was going to say it was on our story. Go make them one. Yeah. It was gorgeous.
It was great. I'm already pressuring my husband.
You're like, hint.
He said I'm not allowed to say his name on the podcast, so I'm just going to call him my husband.
Oh, he's a little camera shy. That's okay. He was our behind the scenes cameraman today as we were filming. Like, we were trying to get all together our whole new studio going.
Yeah, setting up the mics was an adventure for us.
Oh, we spent like 3 hours. We're not sophisticated. God forbid we look at it like a manual.
Weird.
All right, well, tell us what this episode is, Jess.
So we're going to name this one Get a Grip. And Alora, in fashion, because we talk about her toes every episode now, wore her grippy socks.
We're going to stop doing that.
Now, it's just going to be a thing. The peeps, the besties are going to love it forever.
Oh my goodness, okay.
So, Alora, tell me a good story from this week.
Okay, so we were actually in the car, and I don't exactly know how we got onto this conversation, but I remember that there's a story that I have never told her, and I was like, oh.
You gotta wait a little bit.
We were talking about, like, not knowing who to call when you have things that mess up, and I was telling her, and I was like, I know the head of drug diversion. I know his name personally.
First off, who knew that I was even a job?
I did not know until, but I'll tell you guys the story because I just think it's so funny. I was fresh off of my LPN orientation. Like, We're talking, I think this, what, I got off of orientation what? Because it started in June, like September, which is I think when it ended it officially. Right after we went back to school. I think like right about November. So I'm like, I am almost, I mean, not brand new, like 2 months off of orientation. But anyway, so I'm doing things on my own and I'm panicking. Because I don't know how to do anything on my own. And this one night, I had a lady who was in just a lot of pain. And I was like, okay, so we were just giving the PRN medications, which are just as needed medications, as like quickly as I could give them. Mm-hmm. And she had called me into the room and she was like, I need one again. And I was like, cool, cool, cool. Let me go grab that. Oh, and gosh, what even was it? I think it was like an oxycodone.
No, you said it was Dilaudid.
No. Was it? Yes. Sorry.
We Dilaudid. Oh, we were talking about my surgery.
Yes, we were. Okay. Dilaudid. Sorry. Okay. I was Dilaudid. Anyways. Sorry. I'm like sniffly. I need water.
Pause for a hydration break.
Okay. Anyway. Anyways, I'm pulling Dilaudid. Right. And it's like a locked drawer for all our narcotics. So we have a big old Omnicell and it like pops out the drawers automatically.
Yeah, that's when like it drops the narcs in and it like pops it out. Yeah.
So anyway, so I do the boopy thingies, right? And I'm waiting and it's doing all the sounds and it's making all the noise. And then it goes, okay, you're ready to pull it. Because it makes like a really obnoxious beeping noise. And I'm looking at it and I'm like, the door didn't pop open. I'm like, okay. So I pull on it. That shit is locked. And I'm like... Like, you give me that Dilaudid right fucking now.
You're like, I need it. This is an emergency.
Yeah, so I'm like, I am pulling on that door because I was like, maybe it's jammed. Don't do that. Just call the pharmacy tech, fun fact. But anyway, so I waited like 10 minutes. And so I tried to just return it and then like pull it again because I was like, maybe it just like blocked or it's dumb. Don't do what I did. Literally just call the fucking pharmacy tech. But anyways, so finally, like, I call the pharmacy tech and I'm like, dude, the door will not open. So she had to come up. It took like 30 minutes and this lady was already dead ass asleep again already in the room. So I was like, what did I even pull this for?
Yeah.
I literally was like, oh, this was not necessary, but okay, whatever. And so I call the pharmacy tech up and I go, hey, bestie, I need you to grab the Dilaudid in there and then we just need to return this because I don't even need it anymore. So instead of having me witness the return and put it back under my name, she was like, no, I'll just like recount it. And then you just witness the recount.
Oh,
and
no.
I was like, I wasn't thinking anything about it. I was like, cool, cool, cool. Thank you. I was like, I can do that. Like, that's easy to
spit out a discrepancy, didn't it?
It sure did. Like, oh, God. I'm talking a long list of, like, it told me that I pulled 3 different Dilaudid. I hadn't even pulled the one. I couldn't get in there. I kind of wish the med rooms had cameras because sometimes I'm like, oh, God, that would have been much easier to just be like, go look at the footage. So it was panicking. I couldn't get think at this point. It's shift change now at this point because it was very late in my shift that we were doing that, but and so she's already gone, so I can't even just call her and be like, come back and help me fucking fix this. So I called the head day pharmacist and I was like, what do I do? Because I was like, I isn't wearing a gun, I'm not drug day urinating. It was like, just my urine. I was like, I will do a drug test right now.
I will pee in a gun.
And so she was like, oh my God, you just need to call the head of drug diversion. And I was like, what the hell is
You're like,
that?
What, that's a job?
No, literally. And that is very much a job. And he is very serious about said job. So I typed out this, I had to RL60 incident because it wasn't my fault that the discrepancy happened. It's just, we didn't return it correctly. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so I had to send him the longest email ever. And it was basically like, you can literally look at the steps of us giving back the medications and making sure the count was correct. Like it's all in there. We didn't take anything. It just looks like I took 3 Dilaudids and I didn't take 3 Dilaudids, I swear.
The count is correct. Okay.
The count is correct. And when you can even see where I went back and I like enter, like we did the witness and everything. So like, and so I had to list it all out and I was like, and then he sends an email back and he says, okay, thank you. I was like,
when I first started working at our hospital, I thought it was so weird that the charges didn't do narc count at the end of every shift. Like
They only do it once a week.
And it's because we used a Pyxis at my hospital in Denver instead of an Omnicell. So like the technology is different, I guess. Somebody had to explain that to me because I was like, what do you mean you guys don't do narc count?
Yeah.
It's so weird to me.
When I think the like the pharmacy techs like do an individual narc count when they like restock all their meds every day. So
you know what? Yeah, but then how do you know which nurse diverted if there's a diversion?
Well, because it like has your name every time you do an entry in the Omni cell, whether you pull anything or not.
That's above my favorite.
I had to learn about it because I had to go back to call. I had to call her and be like, come to the Omni cell right now.
Speaking of treasures, doing weird stuff with the Omni cell. When I was still a CNA, what was I doing? It was the north bedroom. Mm-hmm. And I was doing something over there and I was following her treasures and I was like telling her something like through the door at the bedroom and she was trying to pull something and it did the same thing it did to you where it didn't drop the med into the drawer. And she held me hostage. She held me hostage until somebody from pharmacy came and fixed it. She was like, you don't get to leave. And I was like, I just have to tell
you. Nor should you.
I just want to I'm busy.
you're like, I don't do drugs. I swear to God.
No, I was going to tell you my morphine vial story. So nobody told me. First off, I told you guys that like when I was on my RN orientation with my preceptor, she had to teach me how to push meds because I didn't do it during clinicals. She also got to laugh at me because I didn't know that you weren't supposed to inject air into the morphine vials we have because they're made for the Carbajets.
I hate those things. And everybody loves them.
Oh, I have a Carbajet now. I just put it in my pocket.
I do not like them.
Yeah, more junk in my pocket.
Yeah. Rick left it around here.
And I stole it out of the bedroom. I didn't steal it. Hang on, I didn't steal it. I commandeered it from the bedroom. I think that's what they're for. I don't know, but it lives in my pocket now.
Yeah, I mean, as long as you're using it on the job for a specific purpose, right? Like, would it?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, so, Jessica's dumb and did this not once but twice. I got morphine for my patient and I was in there and my preceptor was like offering something because I was like the end of my orientation. I was like, I can go get this person morphine by myself. I'm fine. Mm-hmm. And nobody told me you don't inject air into it. And that little rubber piece that hooks into the Carbajet came shooting out and the morphine went all over this lady's face. And I was like, oops.
You're like, go ahead and slurp that up.
some transdermal morphine. I'm all patting her.
You're like, you're going to feel real good here.
You're going to be fine. Well, so then I call my preceptor and I'm like, I need an adult. And she goes, what do you mean you need an adult? And I was like, I need an adult.
You're like, I fucked up.
So we go and waste said morphine. I told her what happened. We go and waste said morphine. And I didn't tell her that I injected air in there because I didn't think that was the problem.
Yeah. Oh.
I did not.
You're like, I don't know.
I did not. I was like, I don't know what happened. I just went to pull it and it shot all over her. Okay. So then we go waste that vial of morphine. We pull another one. Uh-huh. And she comes with me, watches me do the same thing, and immediately starts giggling after I have now not only shot morphine all over this lady once, but twice. The patient's laughing, she's laughing, and I'm like, what the heck? And she goes, you don't have to inject air into that. And you injected two instead of one? So it just went real flying. And when I say those little rubber pieces can fly, I think it hit the window.
Like he didn't hit her.
I know.
You're like, I'm sorry.
But the morphine was all over her. Anyway, so then my preceptor went and got, we wasted yet another vial of morphine. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, we're not diverting this, I promise. I'm just done.
Like, I can't handle narcotics.
And we were laughing because, like, you know, when you waste it in the Omni cell, it's like, give the reason for it. And so she jokingly put precepty messed up or whatever. She like basically like without calling me dumb, called me dumb.
Literally. At that point they're like, she's just dumb.
She's just dumb. But then she was like, no, you literally just like draw it up. Cause like you pop that top part off, you know, she's like, you don't have to do anything, you don't have to inject air, you just draw it up and then get it. And I was like, cool. So I've never done that again.
Yeah. I had to do it for once in the PACU and I was like, I am not a fan of it. Like I know in reality it's very easy, but I was like, this is so much work.
Yeah, the girls just, like, use, like, the little blunt needles and do it that way. Just, the Carbajet is, like,
I think to each their own.
There's, like, three nurses on my floor, including me, that use them now.
To each their own. I did the same thing with Salbutamol.
The little ones.
I sprayed it all. Well, I didn't inject air into it, but we've got, there are these little vials that you have to, like, it's almost like those Japanese sodas, if you've ever seen them. And you, like, pop it in, and then it shakes it up with the marble in it. Mm-hmm. Nobody told me those were pressurized. And so I'm pulling it up and I only needed like 1.5 mils instead of the whole two.
Yeah, so it's like one and then you pull
it. So usually like now you're supposed, like now I know that you're supposed to just draw up the 2 mils and then you like pull it out and then you just waste whatever you need.
Yeah.
I didn't do that. And it gets very pressurized very quickly. And I pulled it out at 1.5 and it went.
Yeah, I've done the same thing.
My mouth was open.
Pretty simple. Steamed it a little.
Like a
steroids.
I had to wash my mouth out. They were like, wash your mouth out right now. And I was like, and I literally like swished water for 15 minutes in my mouth to make sure it didn't get anywhere. But I was like, that was mortifying. That was mortifying.
I did that a couple times.
Yeah.
And I'm like, just a little song natural. Just a little.
So yeah, like, and I just, that was embarrassing.
Listen, but friends. Okay. It's okay to make mistakes.
Yeah, so when you're thinking nobody ever did that before, it's us.
It's us. We did it. Or somebody we know has done it.
Yes, I was going to say, literally at this point, like, what haven't I done? What haven't I fucked up?
If you could just, like, learn, I feel like if you could just learn from other people's mistakes, like the stories they tell you,
yeah,
you're going to be a great nurse.
Listen to us. Listen to our stories. It's going to be perfect.
I don't know if you want to take that advice. Sometimes.
Shut up. Hold on. I feel like my mic is like not staying put. That's okay. It's going to sound just fine. I talk very loudly. Okay. Well, let's get into the nitty gritty about this.
Yep. So, get a grip. We're talking. I had a very hard conversation with one of my really good friends that works with me on the floor. And have you ever met someone who doesn't take good criticism very well?
It's me, but like not me at the same time.
Yes. It's hard to hear.
Yeah.
Even though it's not meant to be.
I'm getting much better at it, but like I said, I've talked about this before. Like I have a perfectionism personality. I'm mm-hmm. like, it has to be right the first time or else I really fucked it up. And that's not how nursing is. You're never gonna be perfect on the first try. You just need to be good and safe. Like you need to be safe. But yeah, I take it very hard when people give me constructive criticism, but I'm always looking for it, if that makes sense. Like, I need to know that I messed up, but it hurts me to hear I messed up.
Have you ever heard of the 24-hour rule?
No. Tell me.
So, and I've heard this from a couple people, but, like, the most recent person I've heard it from is our boss, and we're gentle co-working friends.
Are we?
Jessica's worked really hard on her... Jessica has worked really hard on her gentle co-working.
Go ahead and tell them that story, girl. So... Go ahead.
I can't cuss on the podcast.
Never mind.
That's a whole... If you know me, you probably have heard this story. Jessica's gentle co-working because sometimes she's a little too blunt for people. And her constructive criticism doesn't always come across as constructive criticism. It comes off as mean. But no. My boss one day was like, the 24-hour rule. If it's still mm-hmm. bothering you, if something happens... Or there's like a situation and it's still bothering you 24 hours, you need to address it.
Yeah.
I did not, when I had this conversation with my friend, I did not wait 24 hours. I kind of had a full-on meltdown. Also, we had this conversation after I worked like 3 shifts and I was just like really tired and she was really tired. But it came from a place of love.
Yeah.
She told me that she had noticed that I was very like task-focused. And not being a good teammate. And not seeing, like, other things that were going on and that, like, other people needed from me to be a good teammate on the floor. Because, like, obviously I have my own patients, but, like, in the grand scheme of things, the entire floor, like, we're responsible a little bit for, like, everybody because one nurse can't be.
It's a team sport.
One nurse cannot be in 5 rooms at once. Like, it's a team sport. So if a call light's going off, like, we try really hard to, like, help each other go answer call lights and... We always, on our floor, our boss always says that, like, it's never not my call light, it's everybody's call light.
Yeah.
And so she told me that other people, including her, had noticed that, like, I was more task-focused, and I had a full-on meltdown, and I love her, and I know she's listening. But reflecting back on that, I feel like I probably should have waited 24 hours before I, like, really engaged in that conversation, because I feel like the things that she was telling me was really good constructive criticism, and... I've made adjustments, but I was so focused on, like, okay, planning out my day. Like, I use the brain on Epic, and, like, planning out my day, like, okay, I have an antibiotic. I have to hang these antibiotics at 10, and I have to do, like, all of the little things that are, like, tasks that we do as nurses.
Yeah.
That I was, like, so focused on that I was blocking out all of the other things around me, and I wasn't seeing that other people were struggling and really needed help.
I think that warrants a conversation about when to help the team versus when to help you.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, wow, it is very nice that she told you that maybe you could be a little bit more helpful to the team. I know personally that day you were feeling like you were already drowning. Yeah. Like it was already very hard to do what you needed to do. And girl, at the end of the day, it's your license.
There's always two sides to every story though, right?
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Like, it's your license. You have to focus on your people first and then help where you can.
So like, as a new grad, do you feel like, I guess my side of that was, I felt like I was so focused on making sure I was doing everything by policy, getting all my tasks done, mm-hmm. making sure my charting was perfect, and then, you know, like, worrying about, okay, like, did my CNA clean that fully, or do I need to go do that, or did they get a chance to get all their baths done, do they need help with that? Like, I was so focused on that I wasn't seeing the other stuff going on. Mm-hmm. But vice versa, nobody else saw that I was, like, kind of, because I think I'm really good at hiding my panic.
Yeah.
So I was, like, panicking over, like, oh, did I drop that NG tube correctly? Because I did. I dropped an NG tube recently, and I was like, oh, my God. And luckily, like, one of our more experienced nurses, I grabbed her, and she went with me and made sure it was fine. But, like,
yeah.
just little stuff like that where I'm like, am I doing this correctly? Like, do I actually know what I know? And so I'm, like, constantly looking stuff up and making sure, like, okay, I'm giving this med because they have, you know, I'm giving this for albumin, for example, because I was talking about that in farm today.
Yeah.
Like, I'm giving this before I do the Lasix because it's going to pull everything in for the Lasix to get it out, right? So I'm, like, trying.
Hold on.
So you give the albumin, you run the albumin before you give Lasix because the albumin.
Sorry, I had a flip on my mind and I
was like, you're like, wait, no.
Okay. But no, but then I was like, no, wait, she said it right. Sorry.
No, sorry. We were talking about it in my farm class.
I was just like thinking, and I was like, hold on. No, because I thought you said you gave Lasix before the albumin, and I said,
other way.
No. I just had this conversation with my charger. Never mind. Sorry.
Yeah. So anyways, like stuff like that where I'm like constantly making sure like I'm doing things in the right step and I'm reading the orders correctly and I'm communicating with my doctors correctly. Like I was so focused on making sure all of that was good that I wasn't being a good team player. So that was like really hard.
That's hard though.
So, but when is it okay to like, as a new grad, be like, I have to be task focused.
Versus
like trying
helping the team
to helping the team and like looking at the big picture of the entire floor.
I think that's a very like hard conversation. It's going to very much differ by person. I think I am of the side that if my boat is not floating, I'm not throwing like life jackets to other people.
Yeah,
if that makes sense. I gotta pay out my own fucking water real quick.
Put your oxygen mask on for you.
Yes, and that's kind of where I'm at with that. I just, it's hard to be in grad. It's, there are so many things that you're learning, and it's very hard to be bigger picture focused when you don't even feel like you're doing the tasks correct. Like, even just the nursing skills alone can make you feel, like, very anxious and, like, cause a lot of self-doubt. So when you're literally just struggling to stay afloat in your own lifeboat, like, it's very hard to look at other people who are needing some help and go, oh, here, let me stretch myself even thinner. I think that leads to burnout is what it does. I think it, unfortunately, I think we all love to say that we want to help each other, but it can be very hard when you don't know how to help yourself first. So I think that's my biggest advice maybe for this particular episode is that you have got to get your ducks in a row before you start doing things to help other people in a big manner. Like if somebody just needs an ice water and you're just passing by, like you can grab an ice water.
Yeah. Like you can. But it was like things like, and her and I went circled back and talked about this and it was like things that like, I just didn't know that like there was like 5 million things going wrong in another room and that the nurse that was close to me needed help. But also, I feel like the advice of don't talk about me behind my back, talk about me to my face is really important here because had that nurse looked at me and been like, Jessica, I'm struggling, I would have dropped everything and went over there and helped her.
Yeah.
And vice versa. Like,
even if maybe you shouldn't have. Like,
well, and vice versa. But that nurse, I know if I was like, hey, I'm like really, I really don't know, can you help me? They would have dropped what they were doing or found me a resource.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like my floor is really good about like, if they don't know, let's go find the resource together so that we both know for next time. And so it was one of those things where it was like, it was just like everybody was so frustrated because it was the same crew for those like 3 shifts that I worked. Mm-hmm. And like, we were all just like getting wrecked in the trenches. And I think we were all just so tired. And then when my friend brought that conversation up, maybe it wasn't the right time to bring that conversation up because we were all so tired.
Yeah.
But I, like, broke down.
Like, did she follow the 24-hour rule?
No, because I think she was an outsider looking in on this situation.
Yeah.
Because she wasn't even, like, a part of this whole situation. But I'm like, maybe we need to...
It's definitely just food for thought.
Yeah, like, food for thought. Like, on all ends. Like,
and I think it just kind of shows, like, how much, like, when you say something to people, like, it does matter how you say it, when you say it as well. Just as criticism. Much as how well you receive the information and how well you take that in and reflect on it and go, was there something I could have done better, or is there something I need to talk about with somebody else now?
Well, and maybe I need to, like, next time, like, reflect on it before I respond, because I think I responded really badly.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I think for, like, future lessons, like, just... take it, go, okay, thank you.
Yeah.
And then sit on it. And then if you need to go back and readdress it, go back and readdress it. But it was one of those things, like, as nurses, you know, we've said this several times, like, the nurses on our floor are not eat your young.
Mm-hmm.
But I think as nurses, is we don't give ourselves grace, but we also don't give our teammates grace sometimes as much as we should.
Like, you're working really hard and you're like, you just want to see the same level of working hard, but that, like, it just, the entire situation, every patient is different.
Well, and
like, it's just different.
You just don't know what other people are going through. Like, you're not in their shoes. So, like, if you see, and I mean, I feel like I'm really good about looking at nurses and being like, you good?
Yeah.
You good?
Yeah.
Because we're, like, passing each other in the hallway, but, like, how many times are like, yeah, I'm great, and you're, like, actually drowning, and you're like, oh, I don't want to tell them that I'm drowning because I don't want them to think I can't do it.
Yeah.
You know?
So, at the end of the day, new grads, you're going to feel like you're drowning a little bit. And you need to speak that out loud and say, hey, I am drowning. Because I think, like, that's a big part of communication, is that how are they going to know to help you if they do have the chance? Like, if they are settled in their own, like, patient assignment and they're doing okay, and they do have the opportunity to help you, you need to kind of elicit that help. And the caveat that someday you're going to be that more experienced nurse and you're going to have your shit in a row. Your ducks in a row, sorry.
Okay, apparently we are cussing on the podcast.
I've been cussing the entire time.
Oh, I'm fine, then I'm going to tell my story.
Okay. I've been doing that the entire time. What are we talking about?
It wasn't kind, but it was fucking necessary. That's what Jessica says.
I'm forgetting your shirt.
Sometimes you got to say the unkind thing because it's necessary in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the time when it's me, it's coming from a place of love. But I'm just like, don't be dumb.
Anyways, yeah, and that's, so at the end of the day, when your ducks are in a row and you're a more experienced nurse, that caveat is you now elicit that help to others that they did to help you mm-hmm. in the beginning. Like, it's very much just like one big circle of I'm going to help you grow, and then once you grow, you're going to help somebody else. And I think that should be the message we are perpetrating in nursing, instead of eat your own. It's just I'm going to build you, and you're going to continue to build somebody else, and we're just going to create
just
a,
like,
good
make
community.
A ladder.
Yeah.
Make a ladder.
Yeah.
Like, you have to put the
not crab in the bucket anymore.
Yeah.
Like, make your own ladder rung and add a ladder rung each time.
Yep. So that it's there for the next person.
Yeah.
I don't know. That was just, like, a rough situation that I went through, and I was thinking about it, and I was like, we should talk about that. And just, like, how... Okay, so here's another question for you. Yes, we need to be good at giving constructive criticism, and I always say, like, the two goods and a bad. So you tell somebody, hey, you did
the sandwich.
Yes. Hey, you did this really great, but let's work on this.
Yeah.
And then, and you're doing really great here. So it's like, it even though it's like not a feel good situation in the middle, like, you still feel appreciated and
they,
like, you're doing a good job.
Play to your strengths, but also told you something you can do better. Like,
yes.
Yeah.
And so, like, not only do we need to be good at giving constructive criticism, but, like, how do you think that we should be at taking criticism? Like, I know that we both struggle with that and we take it to heart, even though, like, most of the time it's probably coming from a place of love from our coworkers.
Well, and a lot of the times I feel like now, like, a lot of the floor doesn't give me constructive criticism anymore because I'm very hard on myself. I've already said this before. Mm-hmm. Like, I just recently had a situation where, like, I was a lot harder on myself than I needed to be about it. And my church nurse was like, you over-criticize yourself too much. Mm-hmm. Like, but I just, like, I want the best for my patients. And I hold myself to a very high bar. And when I feel like I'm not meeting that bar, it makes me so frustrated. And then I have to, like, play the line between I still am new. I'm still getting used to the acuity of the things I'm doing versus, like, what I should know how to do. I don't know. It's just, I'm just, like, not... So I self-criticize a lot, and I say, hey, do you think I could have done that better? Like, I feel like I could have done that better. And usually it's a no. Usually people say, you did just fine.
So is it, like, you are criticizing yourself?
Yeah.
Okay, so
like I guess, yeah.
I guess my question is, like, do people don't give you criticism? Do you think it's because they already see you criticizing yourself?
Yeah, I think everybody knows that I hold myself to a very high standard. Like, I am a policy queen. I'm like, I look up the research. I really do my best to make sure, like, I understand what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Like, I never want to be the nurse on the floor just doing things because somebody said to do it. So I'm very good at that. But also at the same time, like, caveat, if something goes wrong, I'm very hard on myself because I'm like, I feel like that shouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, I have about 10 million different ways I could have probably prevented it. But usually, like, they're never big things. Like, they're just, like, little mistakes, but they eat me up sometimes. But my floor already knows that I do that, so.
I think that's good that they know that about you.
And I've said it as much. I'm like, I've already said, I'm like, I'm an overthinker. I have a lot of anxiety that surrounds, you know, some of the more acute stuff that we do. Like, I just, like, I understand the depth of the situation. Like, I'm like, these are people's lives, and like, I need to take care of them the best that I can.
I'm laughing because the other day you were texting me that you forgot to charge something, and I was like, I texted you and I was like, I'm gonna pick up my shift just so I can go back and fix it, and I was like, it is never that serious.
It is. I went back.
It is never that serious. Just go to the naughty computer.
I'm not going to the naughty computer. So at our hospital, we can chart something up to 24 hours after it happened. But I had a situation where I had to call the provider. I did all the things, like, everything in the moment. Like, I had done it all.
You just forgot the chart.
But I just timestamped that I had called the doctor, but I didn't say what I called the doctor about or, like, what our interventions were. And it was eating me up. I was sitting there texting Jess going, I'm about to pick up a shift. I don't want to have to go in and admit that I missed something.
I love you. It's never that serious.
I went back. I fixed it because I said, I literally can't do it. I cannot. I, my brain couldn't let me. So I walked in at 11 p.m. that night. And my team went, what the heck are you doing here? And
you're like, I'm unwell. Leave me alone.
Fixing my journey.
I've had to go to the naughty computer.
I don't want to go to the naughty computer.
Our friends that work at other hospitals that don't work with us, do you guys have a naughty computer where you go and fix your stuff? Or
it's like where you can't see the patient's chart past like 24 hours and they have to pull it from like the backup system to fix it.
Are we the only one that call it the naughty computer?
Yeah. And the bat phone.
The bat phone.
I found the bat phone. It actually sits right next to our church desk instead of
in ours corner. Too. I sent it to the group chat with our friends that we were talking about that with. Did you see that? Oh, like the bat phone.
Oh, yes, you did. And I said, I hope it sure doesn't start ringing.
Yeah, you're like, you found it, now it's going to ring.
Okay, so I over-criticize myself. It's one of the things I'm working on. I'm working on not doing that. But how do you take criticism? Do people criticize you a lot?
Not a lot. And it's usually always from a place of, like, constructiveness. It's never like them being mean or nasty. I feel like I get very defensive sometimes, and it's also something I'm working on. Like I said, I think I need to wait the 24 hours, and then if it's still bothering me, address it.
Yeah.
Or like self-reflect before I address it. I think that's what I need to start doing.
I'm a big person on self-reflection.
I'm horrible at it.
Really? All I do is
I'm horrible at it. Do you ever, okay, this sounds funny, and I know a lot of people do you ever like replay conversations in your head when you're in the shower? That's where I do my thinking.
A little bit.
My self-reflection.
I'm very bad at confrontation. That's, I think, my biggest flaw, is that I don't know how to constructively and professionally say things when I feel like I'm not being heard. Or I feel like I'm getting unfair, like, a conversation from the other side.
I was going to say, your social confrontation is hilarious. You were not afraid.
No, but that's the thing that I just can't say it professionally.
Yeah.
I'm like, if I had the grace.
Allura popped off.
If I got full immunity and I could not be fired for what I say in the heat of anger, I would probably be a lot meaner. I do have a lot of things that I like to, but then I'm like, I want to be professional. Like, I don't want it to be a weird, like, energy for the rest of the time that I'm there if something were to happen and I need to have
conversation. That's why I'm working on my gentle co-working.
Yeah, I don't know how to do that.
I know. It's really hard. I'm working on it really hard.
But yeah, so sometimes I feel like I don't speak up when I should because I don't know how to say it politely. Because I'm like, if I could be like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Sometimes I would.
Listen, some of the situations that you've told me about, I'm like, why did you not turn around and be like, what the fuck?
And that's the thing. I'm like, I'm really trying not to get fired. I like my job.
Bitch.
But yeah, so I think that's my biggest flaw. Is just like, I don't know how to confront. I don't know how to confront people in a professional manner. Because I just have a lot of emotions. And I just like, I hold the standard to other people. I hold the bar high. I'm like, if I can think the way I think and I can provide the best for myself and I can look at other people and kind of anticipate what they need, like, why can't you?
You know, that brings up an interesting point. I always say that I will never ask somebody to do something that I'm not willing to do.
Yeah.
So if I'm not willing to get down on my hands and knees and clean blood up off the floor, I will never ask somebody else to do
that. Girl, I do it all the time. Me and those bleach wipes are best friends.
Well, and so I feel like that plays into that too, though. Like, if you can hold yourself to that high standard, you should be able to expect at least similar standards from people around you.
And I'm like, this is just such an important job. I'm like, we do hold people's lives in our hands. Yeah. And, like, just the skills that we do and the attention to detail that we need to have.
So we need to work on our giving constructive criticism as much as we need to work on taking it. I know, but the
thing
is,
I hate to give constructive criticism. This is also one of my things. I feel like it's like throwing stones at glass houses. I'm like, I know my nursing practice is not perfect. I'm like, I know I do things wrong, too. And sometimes I feel like if I were to say something about others, then they could say the exact same thing about me. And I'm like, yeah, I'm working on it, though.
But that's why nursing is a 24-hour job, right?
But yeah.
Because I always tell people when they're like, oh, I forgot to do that. I'm like, guess what? I got 12 hours.
Mm-hmm.
I'm here for 12 hours. I got it. As long as you tell me, I'm like, cool. It's when I go in the room and find things and I'm like, seriously?
I think you should have said something.
You should have said something. Or like, you know, my biggest pet peeve is, you know, so when they come up, we have to change their IV dressings from the... Mm-hmm. regular ones that they use, the cheap ones in the ED to the fancy ones that we have on the floor with the CHG in them. And I've left that a couple times because we've been getting a lot of like shift change admit, but I like straight up, I'm like, hey, I got the supplies. I just don't have time to sit down and do it.
Yeah. And they're never overdue. Just they're due within that day.
They just need to be done.
Yes.
And it's one of those things. Like, I'm like, if you just pass that on to me, I got 12 hours.
Yeah. But I need to know.
12 hours, but I need to know what needs to be done.
Yeah.
I'd rather you tell me something needs to be done than me discover it.
Yes.
And it's, like, something that should have been done. Or, like, one of the big things, we were talking about crush meds earlier. One of the big things is, like, having the crush med consult in for, like, from the pharmacy.
Mm-hmm. That way they can, and for all our non-nursing people, that just means that they look over every drug that you can receive. And if you can't take it in a pill version, can we crush it into a powder and give it in some sort of solution?
Yes, or is there, like, a different, like, Mucinex?
Yes.
Comes in a liquid.
Yeah.
Like, is there a different way that we could give this so that they're not having to choke on a giant pill?
Yeah.
But, like, that was one thing that was, like, a big thing on my floor for a while is, like, people weren't getting crush med consults, and they were just, like, going willy-nilly. Yeah. And so then the roots weren't right and all of this stuff, and it's, like, one of those things that's, like, if you get a patient that comes up and you know that they need crush meds, like, if you don't have time to sit down and get with the pharmacy and get that consult put in, tell me. I have 12 hours. Somewhere in those 12 hours, I have 5 minutes to sit down and handle that. Like, I know
put in the order and do
you only have this patient for an hour, but I have them for 12, so I have time. You know, it's like one of those things, like, just tell me. And I would rather you tell me that I missed something too, though.
Mm-hmm.
Where you're like, I don't want to throw a glass. Like, I'd rather you be like, hey, Jess, you gave me this patient and you forgot to change their IV dressing. Or, hey, Jess, you forgot to, like, change your IV tubing or label your IV tubing. Stuff like that. I'd rather you be like, hey, by the way. You know, because it's one of those things that maybe I just overlooked it.
Yeah. Or maybe I didn't know how to do it. Maybe I didn't know
to do it. Or maybe I didn't know it needed to be done.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the first couple weeks I started, we have, like, 7:30 meds that the night shift is supposed to pass. Usually, like, well, not 7:30. 7:30 is kind of, like, weird in between.
That's, like, the weird in between.
I do, too. Because I can usually pass them up to an hour early, you know, depending on what it is. And usually I just do because
it's easier for them coming in and getting their feet.
It's a lot harder to try to look in your chart at the beginning of the day and then have to go pass a med and then come back. And instead, I could have just given the protonics. It's like a Pepcid that we have. And I could have just done that.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I didn't even know we needed to do that. And I think somebody didn't bring it up to me until, like, the third time. They were like, hey, you didn't pass that. And I was like, why do I need to pass that? That's at 7 a.m. I'm not even here at 7 a.m. But yeah, no, it's just like things like that where it's just like maybe you're feeling a little disgruntled about it, but they don't even know that they need to do that. And after that, fix my shit. Never.
We could talk about nursing etiquette on an episode of, like,
we should.
We should do an episode of, like, things that we do to set the next people up.
Yeah. But you have to be really good in tow of taking that constructive criticism and making yourself better for it.
Yeah.
Like, you've got to kind of look at go and you have to, but my thought process is what I did wrong?
Is what I did like, wrong?
Did I mess something up?
Yeah.
Or is this just nitpicky?
Well, and my thing is like, in nursing etiquette, like setting the next person up for success, did you set me up for success?
Yeah.
Because if you didn't, I'm going to tell you about it in a nice way. Mm-hmm. Or, you know what? I'm just going to bite my tongue and get myself together.
Yeah. Because I got 12 hours.
Once again, we got 12 hours. But I'm dang sure going to make sure the person that follows me is, like, set up. You will never catch me there late. I make sure my stuff is done so that as soon as I'm doing the report, I can get out of there. That is, like, my number one life goal is I will never be there, that nurse that's there till 10 charting. And if I am worried, something bad happened.
Well, I guess if I'm charting until 8, it's because I was doing the actual patient care. And I'll timestamp everything I do, and I'll go.
I recently have gotten really, really good about charting in the rooms. Mm-hmm.
It's one of our big things now.
Yep, I've gotten really good at it and making sure, like, at least, like, because we chart by exception at our hospital, making sure, like, I chart at least those so that all I have to do, like, later on when I have a chance to sit down is, like, go and click, 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 and be done.
Yeah.
With whatever I was working on. But I've gotten really good about just, like, making sure it's done because at the end of the day, my one preceptor, my day shift preceptor, told me you're only one code away from being here till 10 o'clock at night charting.
Yeah.
And she is not wrong.
No.
Not wrong. No,
but just, like, very, like, random adverse event. Like, it doesn't have to be a code. It just...
Oh, my gosh.
Literally anything can just disrupt your day and boom.
Do you want to hear of another funny story?
Sure, I do.
I have another funny story for the end here. So, I got a shift change admit before I was leaving. And the nurse that called me, you know, gave me the rundown and I was like, cool, this patient sounds chill. Different nurse brings the patient up. Actually, no, it wasn't a nurse. It was, like, a tech. Uh-huh. Brings the patient up and goes, hey, by the way, they fell downstairs.
Oh.
And I was like, what do you mean?
They're like, what do you mean, by the way?
I'm like, what do you mean? And I was like, did you tell the nurse that had them down there, like, how long ago? And they were like, oh, it was, like, an hour ago. And I was like, the nurse that gave me a report, I know that for nurse, and they're very, very thorough. So I was like, what do you mean? And I was like, okay, so the nurse definitely didn't know. This leads back into my doctor that likes to tell the jokes because that was the doctor for this patient. Mm-hmm. So I had to call him and I was like, hey, bestie. And he goes, don't even. What?
You're like,
I have to tell you this thing. Your patient fell downstairs. And I did the most thorough neuro assessment I think I've ever done in my life because I was like getting this patient and I had to chart on an event that I wasn't a witness to. Yeah. I was getting everything like second and third hand. And so, basically, the patient sat on the edge of the, like, was ad-lib downstairs, which means they can get up and move around by themselves for our non-medical people. But the patient had gone to the bathroom, because part of our ER is kind of fancy, and, like, the nicer rooms down there have, like, bathrooms in the room. And so this patient was in one of those rooms, mm-hmm. and he was walking back from the bathroom and went to sit on the, like, the corner of the gurney, and the mattress, like, moved. And he just, like, slid off and hit his arm on the IV pole.
Oh, my God.
And I felt so bad. This poor guy, his, like, arm was all messed up. And the tech...
And nobody saw it?
Oh, no. The tech that brought this patient up bandaged it, put him in the wheelchair, wheeled him upstairs. So I don't know what was going on in the ER that the tech wasn't like, hey, by the way, he fell. Do we want to do work up here? Or do we want to let them know to do the work up there? Oh, you know, because, like, he did hit his head.
Yeah.
Like, the family was in the room, and they were like, oh, yeah, no, he, like, bonked his head a little bit. So I was, like, super worried.
They didn't say anything downstairs. That's insane.
Approximate, okay? Like, this poor guy had, like, this nice little skin tear, and the skin flap was, like, down, and and she just, like, put a bandage over it, and I was like, so I'm, like, it's, like, 6:40, and I'm in there, and my poor CNA was just, like, running back and forth. I was like, I need this, and she was, like, helping me, like, reapproximate the skin, and it was just, like, this whole thing, and the nurse coming on was like, Jessica, I have 12 hours. What needs to be finished in here? And I was like, okay. So I, like, gave her the rundown. Went and gave report, had to, like, tell my charge nurse what happened, because we were, like, do we chart it as an event on our floor, or do we chart it as an event in the ED? Like, where
would
do we...
Would it be an event in the ED?
So, we charted it as it was our floor.
Yeah.
But, like, in the RL6, we charted, like, that it happened, like, the location that it happened was in the ED.
Okay.
And it was, like, this whole thing. Like, there was this whole, like, we do, like, all of this charting, you know, like, for the fall. Have you done the fall charting yet?
Once.
Okay, so they're changing it, fun fact. You have to double chart it now. But anyway, so I'm, like, filling out the form, and filling out the RL6, I'm calling the doctor, and of course the doctor was like, well, is he being weird? I was like, no.
You're, like, define weird.
I was like, I don't know this man, I just met this man. I don't know what his baseline is. Like, I've known him for 5 minutes. Like, yeah. His neuro is like,
you're like brand new to me.
His neuro is spot on, but like, I don't know if
he's... You're like, this may just warrant you coming up and taking a peeky at him.
Yeah. So anyway, we ended up getting a head CT because we were like, wait, he hit his head. We don't know if, like, he actually hurt himself or anything.
Yeah.
But I felt so bad because, of course, this is like the only man that isn't bald. So I'm, like, digging through his hair, making sure he doesn't have any abrasions, and his family's, like, laughing.
God forbid he has a male pattern baldness.
I'm all digging in there, looking, and he's just, like, I'm okay. Like, he's alert and oriented. Like,
yeah.
You know.
But you're not.
And I was, like, so now you don't get to walk around by yourself. I was going to let you walk around by yourself up here. Because you were doing it downstairs.
Privileges. Lost.
Lost. And you get to wear this fun band that's different than everybody else's.
It's because you're special. Oh no,
it was a whole thing. But like, that nurse that came after me, thank God she was like, tell me what you need me to finish,
yeah,
so that you can go home.
The shift change admits are so hard too.
I know, but it was one of those things.
It's like, you want to do everything, but like, sometimes realistically you cannot.
Hot take. Dude, I think
your assessment.
Hot take. I think admissions are fun. It's like speed dating. You get to know them real quick, but everybody always complains about having to do all the screenings, and I can bust through those in, like, 5 minutes.
It's not too hard.
No, and everybody's like, you just had, like, the alert-oriented patients, and I'm like, no, I've had some little cuckoos.
And then you just heard that you can do it, because they're not even alert-oriented.
Exactly. Why are we spending 30, 40 minutes asking these questions?
And they're unreliable. Oh.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's get into that then. So, you're a new grad nurse. And you're very task focused because you don't understand what the bigger picture is. What is the bigger picture to you? Like, what does that mean to you? Like, so what should they be looking for eventually?
I think like the bigger picture is like taking your assessment skills and being able to relay to the doctor that there's a change that affects the bigger picture. So like, mm-hmm. I guess, like, okay, so I'm thinking about, like, blood administration, and when we were talking about, like, the blood, the transfusion reactions, and, like, the lung sounds,
yeah,
and how they can go from sounding normal to, like, crackles and wet.
Mm-hmm.
Being able to communicate that as a task, because that's a task. It's assessment is a task, right?
Mm-hmm.
So being able to do that task as part of your checklist for your blood administration, right?
Yes, like, you hang the bag. That is the task.
Yes, you did that. You're so far in, you're doing your vitals, you're doing your assessment, all of that thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're assessing. And you're like, there's a change.
Yeah.
That change affects the bigger picture, right? Like, the whole trajectory of now what's going to happen with this patient.
Even looking for that change is the bigger picture.
Yes.
Like, if that makes sense.
And, like, understanding that there was a change and that it's a significant change that you need. Like, my thing was, I'm like, am I overcalling? Am I undercalling? Where's the line?
I am always on the overcall side the time. I'm like, you would rather message somebody for something like maybe you didn't need to, rather than maybe hold something in and suddenly you're in a lawsuit and they're like, why didn't you talk about that? And you're like, I didn't think it was important.
Exactly. Yeah. So I was so focused on like making sure I was doing all of those tasks.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think, that I kind of like that. I think of it kind of when I'm like, looking at hanging fluids, like hanging the fluid is the task.
Yeah.
And your first couple months, like that's literally all you can functionally handle is just getting used to doing the repetitive tasks. But then suddenly looking at the bigger picture is going, do they have CHF? Is this going to fluid overload them? What is their edema looking like right now at the moment? What do I need to be watching out for if this gets worse? What are some maybe not so obvious symptoms that aren't just related to like swelling, like your lung sounds, like you need to be listening.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like finally gathering all this like nursing knowledge that you're going to start to learn and incorporate over your preceptorship.
Yep.
And taking it and going, okay,
all of these tasks,
this task is going to affect this patient. And now I need to understand how it's going to affect them.
Yeah. Like this task leads into the bigger picture.
Yes.
Of like what's going on with this patient.
Yeah.
And I've even gotten to the point where like when I learned the albumin and the Lasix thing, like I would have just had somebody not stopped and said, hey, make sure you give the albumin before you give the Lasix.
Mm-hmm.
Because when it popped up on the MAR, they were together
at the same time.
And I would have given them at the same time had somebody not been like, hey, big picture thought here, what does albumin do?
Yeah.
It pulls the fluid from outside into the to and the then, vascular system, right?
And then, hey, and then the bigger picture.
The Lasix gets it out, right?
Yeah.
So, like, that's the big picture. But, like, had I not done that, I would have done the tasks.
Mm-hmm.
Had somebody not been, like...
You just push the Lasix to the IV and you're like, boom, boom.
Yeah, my tasks are done. I got 2 green check marks, right?
Yeah.
Would it have hurt the patient? Probably not, but would it have got
that's
the...
not for us to know.
But would it have got we the desired like that, effect but... that the doctor wanted me to do?
Yes.
No.
Yeah. I meant like, yes, you're yeah, thinking it, not.
Yes. So, like, it's, like, those things where I'm, like, I'm so worried that I'm not doing the tasks correctly that they affect the big picture.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that I was, like, trying to communicate when I had the conversation with my friend, which was very emotional. I was trying to communicate to her that I was, like, I feel like I'm struggling here, but I also don't want to tell people that I'm struggling here because I feel like I should be on my own now. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's one of those things, and, like, I feel like I ask silly questions.
It's okay to ask silly questions.
I know. I'm like, hi, it's me.
That's my favorite thing on the floor is going, I have a question.
Hi, it's
or,
me.
I took a picture, and I want you to look at it for me.
Yeah. No. So, I mean, I don't know. It's hard to be new.
At the end of the day. You're going to learn. And you're saying, you're like, hey, how do I transition from just doing task-based skills to finding that bigger picture eventually? And I think it's all in finding somebody who has more experience than you. Because had nobody had more experience when you were talking about your albumin and your Lasix, like, if they were just a brand new nurse with you, they might just go give it however you like it. But your more experienced nurse said, hey, you're going to do it in this order because this is what happens when we do this.
Yeah.
So I think that's my biggest thing that I still like to do is that, especially as we gain more acuity, I'd like to ask, hey, what am I looking for? Like, if shit hits the fan, what do I need to see before that? I'm like, what do I need to prevent this picture? And a lot of your more experienced nurses are going to be able to tell you. They're going to be like, okay, well, you usually start seeing this if something crazy is going on. Like, if you are giving somebody fluids and they are fluid overloaded, they might start coughing first before you listen to their, like, lungs and they mm-hmm. sound wet. Like, just, like, weird random things that I don't think I would necessarily have correlated before. But now I'm like, oh, maybe if they're coughing, like, I need to listen to them again. Or maybe if they're getting a little swelly, I need to listen to them. Or I need to, like, assess them again. But just find your nursing or nurse and go, hey, when do you panic?
When do you panic and treat?
When is your panic and when do we treat this?
Yes.
Because me, I panic a lot. I've always...
Alora's the panic.
I'm a panicker. I panic. And so, but I internally
see,
panic.
When we were talking, you were talking about blood pressures one day and I was like, oh, that blood pressure is fine. And then you were like, and then I called the doctor and they gave me and I was like, oh. Jessica's a little lax. She's fine. I'm like, what's their map?
Whereas I'm like, it's a little different than the baseline.
We had a lady that was, like, running low blood pressures, and they were giving her, like, bolus after bolus, and I finally looked at the doctor one day, and I was like, when are we gonna go put her on pressors? Because, like, we have given her so many boluses.
Literally.
It was,
you're
like,
fluid overloading
it was,
her.
Like, 16 liters over her hospital stay, because there's, like, a spot on the side where you can see how much fluid you've given them.
That's crazy.
And I was like, that's a lot of fluid.
Yeah.
Like, when are we gonna say stop? And go and try something different.
Like, it's crazy she wasn't puffed up like a little Cheeto Puff.
She was already puffed up before she got there.
Oh, dialysis.
So it was like, yes, it was, she was a dialysis mm-hmm. patient. But I'm like, guys, let's use our bigger thinking brains.
Yeah.
When are we, like, this obviously for days now has not been working.
I think we should go into that in an episode. Sorry to cut you off real quick.
You're okay.
Just for future thoughts and references, like, when do we need to go to higher care?
Exactly.
Write that down. Anyways.
Write that down.
Continue.
Or write that down. No, but, like, it was one of those things where I was like, now I'm like, what's their map? Are they perfusing? Do I need, like, do I really need to panic?
Where
or is this something
vitals?
That, like, it's always in the morning, too. And I'm like, did you get him out of bed yet?
Yeah.
My poor CNAs are like, Jessica, I'm like, did you get a manual? I have, like, a list of questions. I'm like, did you get a manual? And they're like, no. And I'm like, what's their map? And they, like, tell me. And I'm like, can you get a manual? And then they'll message me back. And I'm like, oh, it's still low. I'm like, let's get him in the chair. Then retake that and see. Or, like, if it's high, I'm like, look. And I'm like, oh, I got blood pressure meds for him. I don't care.
Yeah.
Not that big of a deal. Like, they'll be within parameters.
Like, we'll check it within half an hour after the blood pressure meds to see what it's looking like.
Yes. But I'm like, you were talking about blood pressure one night. And I was like, oh, I'm really lax over here. Because I, like, have my list of stuff I do before I, like,
mm-hmm.
I hate calling the doctors. It's not bad. I hate it. I'm like, oh, God dang it.
I can't talk about that on here, so.
I know. But I'm like, I don't want to call them unless it's, like, legit, like, I need something from them.
Yeah.
For their patient, or, like, something's changing. So to call them and be like, hey, by the way, and, like, it's when I know that they're not going to do anything about it. Like, I think Epic flags blood pressures mm-hmm. at the appropriate time, but sometimes I'm like, I would like parameters, please.
Yeah.
Like, when do you want me to call you?
Sometimes it's kind of silly because I'm like, there should already be parameters.
Have you had that conversation yet?
Yeah.
I have several providers. I'm like, can you just put parameters in? When do you want me to call you?
Yeah.
And or
they,
like,
they kind of act like dismissive. And
you
like,
want me to monitor, but monitor until when? Is
yeah.
like a question I've asked.
I'm like, I can do my job all day long, but I'm like, if I don't know when to contact you, I'm just going to contact you all the time.
I'm just going to contact you in 5 minutes
just,
because
it goes right back to that communication piece, folks.
Yep.
What were you talking about before all this?
I don't know. I think we've gone off on a tangent.
We sure have.
That's okay.
Okay. Oh, at the end of the day, I think I was talking about asking questions about when to,
like
when
task to big picture.
When to panic. Oh, but at the end of the day, like, I think the first time you experience an adverse event, you know, like your patient starts desatting, I'm like, you're going to panic. It's hopefully you have a very good preceptor who's going to be like, don't panic yet. Because me, it would be me, like, in the room and my patient's on room air and they're at like maybe 87%. And I'm like, I don't know what to do.
Have you had a
moment? I don't know what to do. And then my nurse would be like, just put them on a little oxygen, Alora. Come on. And I'm like, okay.
Have you had a moment where you're the nurse in the room that's not panicking yet?
Yeah.
Yeah? Tell me.
I got a lot better at respiratory stuff. I did my preceptorship.
Oh, yeah, in the PACU.
In the PACU. And I learned a lot about how to deal with desaturation and when is a panic moment versus what are my interventions to fix it before we get to that point. Like, I've gotten a lot better at, like, going, okay, this is okay for right now, but we need to work quickly to fix it. So I'm much better at that stuff now.
I've not had a respiratory patient yet.
Yeah. I just had somebody that I saved from going up to the ICU a little bit. I don't know if I really want to put this one on the podcast.
Yeah,
I'll tell you about it. Just because we're yapping right now.
No, I had the moment where I was the comm nurse in the room. When we went to Louisville for the SNA conference and we did the seizure certification?
Mm-hmm.
Came in handy. Learned a lot in that.
It's your seizure cert, people. It's useful.
That was very useful. And it was like a dug down one for like the public. But the skills that we talked about in there were kind of like things that locked in and it kept me calm in this moment. And mm-hmm. I just like remembered little things about seizures and how it's probably more scary for the person that it's happening to than everybody else in the room.
Yeah.
Like, yes, it's scary for you to witness, but for them, like, they're probably freaking out more than we are and they know what's going on around them. But we had a patient that they brought up from the ED and it was a patient that we knew. We've had this patient several times on the floor, but it was when we were LPNs and it was during our fourth semester actually, because one of our classmates was doing her preceptorship on my floor and she was there with her preceptor and I was an LPN and they got this patient and it was their patient and they had gotten in from the ED that she had like a new onset of like unknown seizures. Like it had just started happening that day and it was like consecutive seizures.
Mm-hmm.
But they got this patient up, they pulled her over from the gurney and she started having a seizure and everybody panicked in the room. There was like two CNAs, the preceptor, our classmate.
Yeah.
And everybody's like shouting things in there and nobody's focusing on the patient. Everybody's panicking. They're like, we need suction and we need seizure pads. And I was like, guys, calm down. And I went in there and of course our poor classmate, everybody was shouting things at her, but nobody was taking the time. Nobody in the background was taking the time to look at her and be like, hey, this is what's happening and this is why we're moving the way we're moving.
Yeah.
And I think as a student, that was probably really hard for her. But everybody was throwing things at her. And the first thing they did was hand her a nasal cannula and tell her to hook it up. And I don't think that she had a respiratory patient at that time.
Yeah.
And I don't think she was like, there was so much chaos going on. She hooked it to that air line, like the yellow one.
Oh gosh, the air, just the air.
I don't even know what that one does. But that's when she's
just like, because it's not like 100% oxygen. It's just like 21% oxygen. It's like a room air mix. Huh. Like, it's basically just blasting room air at you instead of just pure supplemental oxygen.
Oh, well, I've never even used that. I've never seen anybody use that, so I didn't know what I did. Haven't seen it. But she, like, hooked it up to that and was, like, putting it on the patient. And everybody's panicking. And I'm like, you guys, she's losing her airway. Because she was, like, seizing so hard. I was like, guys, guys, guys. And all I did was push everybody out of the way, went in there, turned this patient on her side. Immediately, I heard her take a deep breath. And she seized for about, like, 10 more seconds. And then she stopped.
It did.
Well, and it was funny because during those, like, the whole time I was in, she ended up having another seizure, like, shortly after. She went into status epilepticus. Mm-hmm. But,
Dude, the amount of people that go into status epilepticus on your floor is
insane. We've had two. That was the first one.
Have you heard that TikTok sound where it's like, oh gosh, it's like plankton. And he's like, oh no, it's Dr. Doofenshmirtz from Phineas and Ferb. Mm-hmm. And he goes, oh gosh, I'm gonna have to look it up. But it was, he's like, it's really weird that this is, he was like, if I had a nickel for every time this happened, it'd be weird because I have two nickels.
Yes. Well, and you know what's funny is I listened to that.
I have to look up the TikTok sound. I butchered that, friends.
Before this patient came up, the day before, had listened to the Rapid Response RN episode about status epilepticus.
Oh, we cannot praise her enough. Go listen to her.
We'll tag her so you guys can find her because she's fantastic in telling stories so that you learn about disease processes through a story instead of like somebody being like, this is a pathophysiology. Yeah. But I had just listened to her episode about it, and she's the one that was telling me that they, like, I learned from her that they, even though they're having a seizure, they know what's going on around them. Like, they can still hear you.
Yeah.
And so this poor patient went into another seizure, and the first thing I did was I started talking to her, because I've been her nurse before, and I was like, hey, it's Jess, you're okay, we have you, nothing bad's happening, I just want you to... don't fight it. Just let it happen. And we're going to take care of you. And I just talked to her the whole time. And her daughter was like, you handled. When I walked out into the hallway after the doctors got up there, because then it got really crowded.
Where's your Daisy?
I know. Where's my Daisy? God dang it.
Daisy.
her daughter was like, you were so kind to her. And I was like, oh, I've taken care of her before. And she's just a who. You know, it was just like playing it off. Mm-hmm. But I was like, not every other nurse in that room has at least a year or more of RN experience.
Yeah.
Other than me and the student. And I was like, we need to have more seizures around here. Why was I the one that was calm?
I don't know.
I was like, why was I the calm one?
I had a patient this last week who, super bad COPD, like prior intubations for COPD exacerbation.
Oh my gosh, those scare me.
He was perfect. Like, he was supposed to discharge home that day. He didn't end up discharging because I think they couldn't exactly get him off of his, they couldn't get him to his baseline requirements. They were like, just stay one more night, you know, just chill. He was perfect. Perfect, fine, dandy, walkie-talkie, throwing jokes at me all night long. And then suddenly, I'm sitting at my computer, like, and he just starts going really tacky, really fast. And, it's been, like, maybe 2 minutes, and I went, you know what? Something feels a little funky. I was like, I'm just gonna go check on him. He's ad-lib in the room, like, he walks around, but mm-hmm. I was like, I'm just gonna go do a little chick-a-rooney. Because
I love your floor. You guys have the windows, and you can be like,
yeah, and so he just got back from the bathroom, and he was diaphoretic, like I'm talking, like so pale, clammy, diaphoretic, tripoding right there, and I immediately sat him down on the bed, and I said, you sit down, and you just fucking breathe.
You breathe.
No, sorry. I didn't know he was trying to talk to me, and I said, nope, shut your mouth. I was just like, breathe. I need you to breathe right now, because he was starting to desat, so I called respiratory, and I was like, get your little booty over here real quick. But like I said, I didn't panic.
I'm so proud of you.
I immediately just jumped into it, and I went, I know how to fix this. He had PRN neb treatment. So I was like, maybe we just need a neb treatment right now. I listened to him because I had my stethoscope on me and he just didn't have a lot of air going through.
With that sucker out.
I sure did. But that's the bigger picture that we're talking about. Like, it's not just putting oxygen or turning oxygen up on somebody. Yes. It's listening and figuring out why we are not getting oxygen. Not just that we need it. That's the bigger picture. But anyways, so immediately respiratory comes in. He's like, okay, I'm going to do two neb treatments. So he did the two, and within 15 minutes, he was on the BiPAP. And I immediately called the provider, and I said, hey. I was like, things got real serious real quick, and I need you to come up and see this patient right now. She gave me a little bit of pushback, and I said, nope, me and the RT are recommending this. I need you to come see him right now. Because I was getting ready for an IC report. I was getting ready because this man has been intubated before, and this was worse than when he had been intubated. Like, he just got very, very bad. They thought he had a mucus plug, actually.
Have you seen them pull those out yet?
No. Oh, I've heard about it.
They're so cool.
Anyways, he ended up, like, decongesting himself. They did some fancy thing. I don't even know what it's called. I'm not even going to, like, elaborate on it because I don't know what they did. But it was just in the moment. I was like, okay, I know who I need to call. I know that I need to get the provider up here right now. I know I need to get ready to give a report to the ICU if things go bad. And I know I need to put another IV in because he only had one at that point. But anyways, yep. It was just, but we ended up getting him stabilized. And I could only think that if I had come in 20 minutes later, it would have been a very different situation. It would have been a very different situation. It would have been bad. But like I said, it's just like you learn things and like there was no panic. I just simply did it. And that was probably one of the first times where I knew what to do. And like I said, I've been doing nursing for a year and a half.
I'm so proud of you.
That was the first time I didn't immediately call my chargers and be like, Mom, no, I'm so scared right now.
I need a mom.
I did call her afterwards and I was like,
you're like, guess what I did?
I was like, okay, they weren't going. They're not going.
Guess what I did?
He's the sweetest man. I'm glad. But it was also that thing where they were all kind of talking and I was like, hey, and he knows
the ICU. He's been there
like
before.
And he knows where he was at and he was getting kind of scared. And he said it was okay for me to tell this story on the podcast, too. I asked him. And he was like, okay, I'm scared right now. And I was like, we're just going to do everything to not get you to that point yet. I was like, I can't guarantee it, but I'm like, we're not letting you go yet. And he was okay. He discharged the next day, but he, like, talked to me in the morning. He said, thank God I did not go home.
Because that would have happened.
Because even if I had gone to see him 20 minutes later, I'm thinking it could have been so much worse. Like, if he had gone home, because he lives very rural.
Yeah.
Like, it would have been bad.
Rural medicine around here, friends.
It would have been bad. And so he was just very thankful for that. And I think they ended up changing a lot of his meds around to help him, like, breathe a little bit easier. But it was just, you know, it's just those situations where you feel now as a new grad that you're going, like, you're thinking everything. Like, you don't know how to handle anything. But someday it's just going to click. And you are going to know what to do in some situations.
You were ready. You knew what you knew.
Yeah.
What was happening, what you needed to do in the moment, and then what could happen if things did not turn around.
Yeah.
So you had your checklist. You were like, okay, I've done this before, and I know the X, Y, or Z is going to happen, and so I need to be ready for X, Y, or Z.
And a very wise nurse once told me that if they are needing more than 2 to 3 liters off of their baseline requirements, it warrants contacting the provider. Now, I would have called anyways, because when you go from 2 liters of oxygen
to a BiPAP,
which is a very, like, it's a machine that literally pushes air into you because you are not moving air yourself.
Yeah.
It's a very serious situation, especially for someone who's not on a BiPAP normally. So I would have called anyways, but that's a good note for all of the new nurses is that if they are requiring more than 2 liters off of their baseline,
it's a call.
Then 2 to 3, then I would
that's
call.
A change.
And it just at least, like, message your provider and say, hey, I'm noticing this. Is there things I need to be worried about, or are there things you want me to monitor more closely? And then go from there. Literally. Tell me
what you want.
And that's what you have to do sometimes as a new grad. Because I'm like, you are not going to know what you need to see. It takes time to learn that. So you need to, like, and I wish providers would be a little bit more understanding about this. I'm like, I know you know what you're looking for, but I don't know what I'm looking for. And I need you to tell me what you want to see. Like, when is it a call you situation?
I had that happen with a wound the other day. I had a patient that had cellulitis. Mm-hmm. And so we were doing all the things. We were doing the antibiotics. He was, the wound care nurse was coming up and doing, like, a special dressing on it because it was, like, a really funky wound that he usually goes to the wound clinic for. And the infectious disease doctor came up because they were messing with his antibiotics because, like, it got better, but then it got worse. It was very weird. But I had this patient for, like, several days, and this was, like, our third day together, and I was like, I don't know. Because we, like, you know, you outline it, all of that, and I was like, it just looks like it's moving back the other way. Like, it was doing really good for 2 days, and then now it looks like it's going back the other way. And the nurse practitioner was like, oh, and she's new to infectious disease. Like, she just transferred to that service, so she's, like, learning all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was like, I think you're right. Let's talk to the hospitalist and see if she wants to order scans to see if there's, like, something deeper going on than just cellulitis. And I'm like, okay, cool. So she gets on and she starts this, like, group chat with the other infection, like, the main infectious disease doctor, the hospitalist, and the hospitalist is like, oh, I'll just order the scans. Then the infectious disease doctor comes up and he comes and looks at it and he's like, oh, no, you guys have just had it elevated. for too long, and you need to, so basically, like, what we were assessing, we thought was worse, and then somebody who knew something more came up and was like, oh no, it's not that, it's not bad, don't panic. But yeah. I, like, learned, like, he had been sitting in his chair for most of the morning, and so his feet were up, and it was just causing more issues, basically, like, because of other disease processes that were going on. But I
got it.
Once again, was not looking at the big picture, I was looking at the tasks.
Happens sometimes.
So, yeah.
And you still messaged, and you still
and looked. Yeah, and I mean, like, even the nurse practitioner, who is obviously new to that, but she's been a nurse practitioner forever, and she was like, yeah, it looks different today, I agree. Yeah. So I got, like, that validation that, like, I noticed something different, but then I assessed it wrong. Like, I was assessing it differently than...
That was one of the things we wanted to talk about, is that you're not going to know automatically what you're assessing. But
it's
just
not your job.
You're just, like, you're not going to know you're not going to know exactly what is wrong, but you do need to know that something is wrong.
Yes, you need to be able to communicate that something's going on.
Yeah, you're like, I don't exactly know what's going on right now, but I know it's not right.
Yeah. So that's what I did with that.
That's what friends are for.
That's what friends are for. That's what friends are for. Like, you never feel dumb for having to go and, hey, can you take a look at this with me? I don't know what I'm looking at.
Oh, gosh.
That Chick-fil-A is not sitting well.
I know. I'm like a little burpy. Actually, sorry. TMI.
Sorry,
friends.
TMI. Sorry, besties.
I simply will not be excluding anything, because, God forbid, you set the bar high on me. The bar's on the floor. Keep it there.
No, but it was one of those things, like, I raised the question, and then somebody who knew more came in and taught us something new.
Yeah.
So you're always going to learn something new, too, even though you don't know. I don't know. It was a good day. That was a good learning day.
And
I think
the doctors really like to teach.
Yeah, some of our doctors are really good about that.
I'm like, you're just so smart, and sometimes I just want to know where your thinking is at. Mm-hmm. Like, I may not need to actually know it, but
I want to know.
I'm just nosy. I just want to know. What are we thinking?
We're both very nosy people.
But I think, yeah, I don't know. Is that a good end to that? Like, just leading off on a good note of just notice that something is wrong.
Focus
and
on your tasks.
Yes.
The gist of it is focus on your tasks.
Yeah.
But also, don't let your tasks get in the way of the bigger picture.
Yes. Learn your tasks. Start asking questions while you're doing your tasks. Go, what happens if I... Just play the what-if game.
Play the what-if game.
Play the what-if game no matter what you do. Like, when you're hanging fluids, you look at your preceptor and go, what if we gave them too much? What happens?
We need to be also, we learned that today.
Yeah, quiz
the
them.
Two of us. Quiz your preceptor.
No, quiz them. Make them fear.
The two of us need to be better about taking and giving criticism.
Yes. I think we've learned a lot about each other today.
We've learned a lot about ourselves
today. I think everybody should be self-reflecting on this and going, do I take criticism well? Could I do it better? Could I give criticism? Am I floating? Do I even have room to help other people?
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of it, do I even know what I need to do to help myself to stop from floating?
Yep.
At some point, you got to drive the damn boat.
Listen, airline rules. Put your mask on before you help others.
Yep. Gotcha. You can't. It's at the end of the day, it really is your license. I'm like, it's in a court of law, like, they're not going to go, well, I know you were helping your friend, and that's very admirable, but you still, like, this patient had an adverse event because you weren't doing what you needed to do.
Yep.
So focus on yourself first, get to a point where you feel comfortable helping others, and then just give back. And you'll be better. We're all going to be better nurses for that eventually. Like, I think we're really shifting the culture of healthcare right now.
Yep.
We're not eating our young anymore. We're building each other up.
All right, friends.
But that's it. That's our soapbox for the day, okay?
Laura, you want me to dust it off?
We already did that. Put that bad boy down, actually. It's time.
All right, besties. We'll see you guys next week.
All right. Love y'all. Bye.
Bye.